Could I have a roll call, please?
Mayor Olson.
Mayor Olson is absent. Alderman D'Andrea is sitting in for Ms. Mayor Olson.
Commissioner Hogan.
Here.
Commissioner Thinnes.
Here.
Commissioner Haley.
Here.
Commissioner Morrow.
Here.
Alderman D'Andrea is here.
Here.
Commissioner Fowler. He's excused.
He's excused. I'd like to stand for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, as you can see, I am sitting in for the mayor. The mayor has expresses his apology, but he has a daytime position that has called him out of town for the week on a business meeting. What I'd like to do next is have an approval of the minutes from our last meeting.
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Against?
Aye.
Aye.
There's no one against.
No,
oh, I'm sorry.
Said
I think you said again.
No, again. I heard four affirmative votes, and on the again, they said again. Yes. Approved. Today, our agenda is to, we'd like to cover one item before we get to the issues or regarding the ROC. The first meeting, C1, is regarding a public hearing notice for David Drager and Rhonda Drager, a single-family residence construction. It is open for a public hearing, so this is only regarding this issue, not the ROC issue. So if anybody is going to come up during public hearing, they will talk. We're only going to address questions regarding the splitting of the parcel on the Drager question C1. I go to Nick to read the public hearing.
Notice is hereby given that the Plan Commission of the City of Franklin will conduct a public hearing on Thursday, March 17th, 2016 at 7 p.m. or soon thereafter as the matter may be heard in the Common Council Chambers of the Franklin City Hall, 9229 West Loomis Road, Franklin, Wisconsin, 53132. To hear public comment regarding an application from David Drager and Rhonda Drager for a special exception to natural resource feature provisions for property located at 2925 West Acre Avenue, zoned R3, Suburban Estate Single Family Residence District, which bears tax key number 832-9962-000. The requested special exception to natural resource feature provisions is for the purpose of allowing for removal of approximately 0.03 acres of mature woodland grove to allow for construction of a single-family residence.
And then we'll follow up with Joel Dietl with some preliminary coverage.
Thank you. This matter, again, is a public hearing for the natural resource special exception. Anybody who wishes to speak on this matter will have to be sworn in, and the city attorney will do that. And just to summarize really quick, as was mentioned, the property owners, they live on Acre Avenue. They're proposing to split their lot in half. Each half would be about the same size as all the surrounding lots. But as you can see on the photograph, it's the larger parcel, 2925, in the middle. It's a little bit larger, but it's also mostly covered in woods. So to be able to build that second house, they're going to keep the existing house in one lot, and then on the other lot, build a new house. They would have to remove some of the woods. And the city protects 70% of the woods in this situation, and they're going to be cutting down a little bit more than 30%, and that's where this public hearing comes in. The Plan Commission makes a recommendation, and all this information is forwarded to the Common Council for final decision. In addition, on this item, not part of the public hearing, but related to it is the CSM itself. The Plan Commission will be making a recommendation about that as well. But tonight is the public hearing on the request to remove more than 30% of the trees.
We'd like to open up the public hearing on the C1 for David Drager and Rhonda Drager, the single-family residence construction. I'd like to call up David Drager and Rhonda Drager to be able to answer questions. You can please be seated at the table. And the public hearing is open. Are there any questions from the public that you'd have questions or concerns regarding the separation of this parcel? Seeing no one coming forward or anyone raising any... Yes, sir. Could you please come up to the microphone, please? You're going to have to state your name and address, as well as we're going to have to swear you in.
Please raise your right hand. Do you promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Please state your name and address for the record.
Jack Woges, 3015 West Acre Avenue. I live directly west of the neighbors. The only question I have is, I'm just kind of concerned about the grade. It is really low there. Like, the property probably where they plan to build is probably about at least 8 feet below the grade of my house. And I'm just wondering, we are in a wetland area there. And I'm just kind of concerned about drainage and stuff, how it might affect my property, you know, if they've had, anyone look at that and address that issue. Because the neighbors that lived there before, they actually moved because they owned that. It was Pam and Greg Ross, and they owned the property, and they wanted to build. And there was kind of some negativity. I guess they had talked to the city of Franklin and a builder and some excavators. They thought because it was so low, they said there was be so much fill, it wasn't recommended, which is why they actually moved. So I'm just wondering if they checked out all of that with the builder or somebody that would know about, you know, the amount of fill that would have to be brought in to build there. That's my concern.
Thank you, sir. Joel, your evaluation of the elevation markers on the map that we're seeing, do you have concerns about the grade, or will there be a grade set at time of construction?
Planning staff didn't look at the grade. I believe engineering and building inspection does later in the process.
Okay.
And then they will set those grades and establish drainage swales on the sides of the property. The planning department does require an analysis and investigation of wetlands. A specialist went out to this property, did one of these natural resource protection plans, identified no wetlands on the property. There are wetlands adjacent to, and the setback does extend onto this property, but the wetlands themselves are not on this property. That expert that they hired only identified the woodlands.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions from the audience? Yes, ma'am. We'll need you to do the same thing that the gentleman did prior. The attorney will swear you in.
Please raise your right hand. Promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Please state your name and address for the record.
Mary Woges, 3015 West Acre. My concern is that before, when people were talking about building on that property, there was a rumor in the neighborhood that they would run city water down the street if one more house got built on our street, which would affect all of our neighbors, and it would be a financial strain for some of them. Is that accurate or not?
That's a good question. That is something that we'll have to research and look at historical information to see if there's validity to that statement. And we'll, Joel, maybe you can address the question for the...
There is public sanitary sewer available, and they're going to have to hook up. Our ordinance does require that these properties have to hook up to sewer and water when there's new development. We note, and we're one of our conditions is the CSM actually notes that there is no public water here, but there is public sewer. So the normal process is when there is no water available, that property owner, before they can build their house, has to come to the council and get permission not to have public water. Okay. And then it's up to the council to decide if there's a survey and what the results of the survey are, and then the council decides. So that process is what the city follows all the time. Before they can build, they would have to go through that process. And then if they get turned down by the city, then they don't have to have public water.
Thank you. Any other questions out there regarding the dragger splitting of the lot? Seeing none, hearing none, we'll close the public hearing on the dragger separation. Now we will open the questions up, Mr. and Mrs. Dragger, to the commission. Does any Commissioner Haley?
I guess a question for the applicants, or sort of a statement too. If you're granted the natural resource special exception, you're creating a conservation easement within that boundary. That means that basically it's not supposed to be disturbed. So I'm hearing it may already be low, which usually implies more grading and pushing the limits out. I guess I'm just suggesting wanting to know that you understand that, and that it may be difficult to actually physically build the house in there, the construction pinched in on the backyard. So I just want to make sure that you're aware.
Yes, we are.
It'd be problematic.
We know that when our neighbors have built the house, they had to bring the grade to the level with the road before us, so we know we would need to fill in as well, and we do accept the risk.
But you won't be able to fill in to the rear.
That's correct.
Mr. Dragger or Mrs. Dragger, I recommend that you use the microphone, please.
Sorry.
Thank you. Just pull it towards you. And then when you're asked, please respond close. Commissioner.
Yes, I just wanted to point out that on your CSM, it actually says land is served by sanitary sewer and water, and obviously it's not served by water. You have to approach the Common Council for that. So.
Yeah, that's the note. The condition is to fix that, okay. Or one of the conditions is to fix that.
And you're aware of that, correct?
Yes, we already spoke to someone about that because we didn't want it to be a hardship on ourselves as well as our neighbors. So before we even began this process, I had talked to someone in the city. I think, I'm not sure their name, but I had spoken to someone to make sure that wouldn't be a problem for us or our neighbors.
Okay. Commissioner Sinis.
I was out past this property today, and there is a serious depression into that lot from the road height. But I noticed, is the house that's there on the lot now at the same height as that land? It looks like it is, and it has a ramping driveway that ramps up considerably up to the road. Is that what your intention is to have that ramping driveway like that for your house?
No, we would backfill. For the new house, we would bring it with the road.
Up with the road. So you're going to have a considerable fall off towards that house next door to you and the house on the other side, which is the 3015, which is kind of down too a little bit.
We would actually try to make it so we are on one level with the 3015 and had a slope with the 29, with the house that we currently live in, the way that the drainage goes in a bank.
Okay, so you want to match up with 3015.
That is correct.
The elevation of your house goes. And the other thing, I know you mentioned 30%. This isn't like a really wooded area that they're going to clear cut 30% of the trees out of there. These are spotty trees around this part of the yard. I looked down. There's a lot of big trees there, but what are you taking out, like 6 trees total?
Five. That is correct. Six trees
total, and then replacing one further back in your yard.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Hearing none, are you prepared to offer a motion on behalf of? I've got some recommended motion. For those individuals that are in the back, we do have the hearing room to the left of me that has ample seating that people go in and vote. It is open. It is, you can hear. The microphone should be on. There are chairs, and it would probably make it a little bit more pleasant as we move forward. Okay. Well, thanks. If you'd like to stand, you're very welcome. Okay. Okay. Then the recommended motion for C1 would read special exception public hearing. A motion to recommend approval of the David Drager and Rhonda Drager Natural Resource Feature Special Exception pursuant to the standards, findings, and decision recommended by the Plan Commission and Common Council consideration of the Environmental Commission recommendations. Do I hear a motion to approve?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Against? Hearing none? 4-1. Or 4-0. New math.
Motion passes.
Now I have to do this one too. Okay. Then,
for the CSM,
two-lot certified survey map, a motion to recommend approval of a resolution conditionally approving a two-lot certified survey map being that part of the southeast one-quarter of Section 13, Town 5 North, Range 21 East, in the City of Franklin, County of Milwaukee, State of Wisconsin. Do I hear a motion to approve?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Against? The vote is approved, 4-0. Motion approved. Mr. and Mrs. Drager, you are moving one step further.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, and congratulations. Now to the next step on the agenda, C2. C2 is the Plan Development District. Number 37, the Rock Sports Complex. Proposed baseball commons, sports-anchored mixed-use development. But in order for me to move forward with this, there has been changes in this project that have come to us recently. And so before we go to the public hearing, I would like to have the development team come up and present the changes and present the concept to us, especially to some of the members of the commission that may not have heard this. I definitely want to make sure that the public is also informed of changes that may become that have come up in the recent past based on your public listening sessions that you've been conducting. As well as it may answer some of the questions that they've have before we open it up. So, Mr. Marcel and the team, be our guest.
Thank you for having us this evening. I'm Greg Marcel. For those who don't know me, I'm a local Franklin resident, have been here my whole life. I'm a local home builder, as well as I have a commercial construction company as well. I want to introduce, if you don't know him, Blair Williams with Wired Property. He is a Milwaukee developer, arguably the best developer for mixed-use retail in the city. He's done a lot of projects. He'll give you a little more of the background on that, as well as introduce Ian Abston, another member of our team as well. With that, I want to let Blair take over.
Thank you for having us tonight. We know this is going to be a long night, and I apologize in advance. I'm not going to do my part in keeping it brief. I also want to apologize to the folks behind me for showing my back to you. It's a little bit strange in this format to be presenting something that I know people are so keenly interested in. So you have seen some changes, and what you are going to see today is our general development plan. And I've highlighted the word general here, and I think one of the things that's important to note about the process as we're moving through it here today is that this is a little bit different than what we've typically seen in Franklin. It's not atypical to what we would see in municipalities across the country. Most often in Franklin, you've dealt with specific development plans at the same time as all of the PDD approvals. And the ordinances allow for a two-step process as opposed to a single process, whereby a general development plan can be approved that establishes the bulk requirements and the general outlines for the future development, and a specific development plan would follow. We also would like to acknowledge and apologize for the timing of some of the materials that you did receive a little bit later than you typically would have. That's actually reflective of the approach that we've been taking with this process, which is that it needs to be iterative, and we really need to pay attention to continuously improving the development plan as we develop it. And so we were specifically working on a couple of supporting documents that we think are very important as you consider this moving forward.
Blair, can you hear Mr. Williams back there? You just pick that off and then speak. There you go.
Is that going to be better?
Yes.
So in any case, we would like to apologize for the timing of some of the materials. However, we believe that the timing actually works appropriately in the sense that we were able to give you a stronger package. So the purpose of this submittal and the reason that we're here today is to take the next step forward to amend the comprehensive plan and to rezone the property through the amendment to the PDD in order to facilitate the mixed-use development that we are proposing. It's intentionally general. This does not allow us to build anything. It simply sets the framework whereby we can come back in the future to present the specific plan that would allow us to seek approvals towards a building permit. The community, both the neighbors and the city, will have significant input throughout this process, and they'll have the ability to comment, not only here tonight, but also at the Common Council, and then also through each step of the process where we bring subsequent developments through for specific plan preparation. And in fact, depending on what happens here tonight and the comments from the commission, it's conceivable that the city planner and the commission could give us direction to make changes to this plan prior to the council reviewing it. So this will be an ongoing and iterative process. The plan is on the screen, the plan's on the screen, and it has changed, and I can't run through it sideways like this. The first thing we're doing north of Rawson, no.
Looks like the Bucks Stadium.
It is the Bucks Stadium.
That might be larger and more controversial yet even than our development. What we're going to do over the course of this is talk about two sides of the street, and it's only so we can break it into manageable pieces. This is the plan north of Rawson. I will later in this presentation highlight the differences between this current plan and the plan that we had presented previously, and specifically get to the question you asked. This is the plan south of Rawson, and of course it's pointed the other direction now, so it's hard to understand. One of the things that's important, I think, is to not only look at the plan technically and what is it that we're doing, but just to talk generally about what is Ballpark Commons and what are we trying to accomplish. So Ballpark Commons, kind of on a big scale, it's a baseball stadium, it's restaurants, it's shopping, it's a hotel, sports and entertainment destination, it's a multifamily community, and it has the potential for over $100 million of total development. There are things that we know are fundamental here. It leverages the success of the Rock. I'll talk a little more about that. It's a sustainable, walkable, bikeable, connected, mixed-use neighborhood and destination. It makes Franklin more attractive to top talent and employers. It makes Franklin more attractive to millennials as they move through their life cycle. It makes Franklin more competitive in its market, and it's an active and engaged community. There are also things that Ballpark Commons is not. It isn't a Me Too development with Franklin trying to present itself in the way other communities are. It's not Drexel Town Square. It's not Bayshore Town Center. It's not Greendale. It's not a theme park, and it's not a shopping mall. The question that we ask ourselves every day and what we really focus on, and the question I'm sure many people in this room are asking, is why Ballpark Commons in the first place? And we think that this is a really fundamental part of the narrative. Successful communities are engaged communities. I've done mixed use all over metropolitan Milwaukee. I've worked on mixed use, large-scale mixed use developments across the country. Shopping as the fundamental baseline for community creation is a flawed model. If you and I go shopping in the same store, we may walk out of Soaps and Scents smelling the same way, but the reality is we haven't created any kind of bond between us based on anything that is associated with how we live our lives. Sports, common activities, Those are profoundly engaging. They create what we'll refer to regularly as collisions between people. Occasionally on the playing field, they're actually collisions, but we're talking about psychological and intellectual collisions where you engage with somebody else. That type of engagement is profound, and the ROC has generated meaningful activity already and offers a profound opportunity to leverage that type of engagement. There are over 150,000 visitors projected for 2016. It already is a regional destination. The baseball fields are sold out for the entire year. We've already seen how folks can come to the ROC and engage in the community. But the ROC can better serve those visitors. It can better serve the new visitors that would come with these development components, and it can better serve the local community. So the next question is, why Ballpark Commons here? Why can't we do it somewhere else? There's vacant land in Franklin. We've heard from folks about vacant storefronts. Well, I think there's a couple of very fundamental reasons for it. This might not be the easiest place to do it, but it might be the only place to do it. The ROC itself is already here. It already generates significant visitor counts. It offers a profound opportunity for leverage. It's a landfill. I mean, there really is no other use for this land, and the opportunity cost of this land as a result is essentially zero. If we do this here, we're not losing the opportunity for additional value creation elsewhere. If we do this somewhere else, that's the only thing you can do on that land. This is incremental value. Forget tax increment financing. This is adding value incrementally to Franklin that it would not be able to achieve if we did it somewhere else. And by placing it here, we create the opportunity to catalyze economic development at 76th and Rawson and throughout Area A, which is a topic of that's associated with what Ehlers and Associates is doing, but throughout Franklin. And we know that 76th and Rawson is not the most dynamically successful part of Franklin right now, but we believe that there's dynamic opportunity there, and by increasing the level of economic activity at this node, we're confident that we can increase the performance at 76th and Rawson as well. It's also an opportunity for placemaking and community, and now we're going to get into the areas where I get pretty passionate about real estate. We believe this is a remarkable opportunity for Franklin to promote itself as a community capable of transformation and evolution. It's a placemaking project. It mixes home, work, recreation, and entertainment. It's a place for community to gather and for community to form. And it's a development that can position Franklin for its present and its future so it can compete most effectively against its neighbors for the next generation of residents. So now we'll go quickly where we've been and where we're going. So we admit that when this started a couple years ago, the team wasn't quite ready. It's not the same development anymore, but it's not entirely new either. It's informed by the process that we've gone through. It's informed by the stakeholder participation, and it's informed by our experience. We believe that just as we have developed as a team, so too has Franklin evolved, and the time is now for Ballpark Commons. Our market outreach has been instructive, and we hope productive. We knocked on 188 doors and spoke with 131 residents. I think they might all be here right now. We've held 4 community listening sessions and spoken to scores more than those in that outreach. Generally, we have found Franklin residents to be extremely supportive of Ballpark Commons, but there are residents, many behind me, mostly near to Ballpark Commons, who have distinct concerns. We've heard those concerns and are working to mitigate them with our plan. We think of kind of 3 groups of neighbors here. So first we have the neighbors south of Rawson, including the Stonehenge community. The strongest concern from that group of neighbors seems to be the multifamily development. What will their view be? What will happen to their property values? Inconsistency with the master plan? What will the quality of the housing be? Who will live there? So we've worked through a variety of paths towards solving for those issues to the extent that we can. One, we brought in Mark Epley to talk about what actually is the impact from an academic perspective of multifamily development on single-family homes. We continue to work through an educational process where we provide more information. We went and hired market research, and we'll talk about that. We've created a 100-foot building setback with a 60-foot-wide landscape berm to provide physical and visual separation. We've added 2-story townhomes along the west property line in order to reduce density and scale in order to match more appropriately to the single-family community. We've moved the 3-story buildings farther away from the community in order to create a greater distance and visual barrier. And we are making an ongoing commitment for stakeholder meetings during the specific plan and approval process. Northwest of Rawson, it's a different set of issues. The strongest concern expressed there is environmental impacts of the development, methane management, the potential for new environmental disturbances. So here, the proposed conditions and solutions are a little bit different. One, we've redesigned and are reprogramming the Four Seasons Indoor Sports Complex. I think that's the one that folks are most skeptical about. What we know is that the landfill will pose substantial challenges. What we don't know yet, and part of the reason we're doing a general plan before a specific plan, is exactly where the edges of the landfill are. We're working very collaboratively with the county. We've had a series of meetings with them that I would characterize both as productive and progressive. We're making progress with what we're doing there. We know we'll need to use different forms of construction on those areas over which are over the landfill. So either lightweight or non or minimally penetrating foundation types. We also know that if something isn't feasible, we can't do it. It's entirely possible that we've proposed something on this plan that we won't be able to build. But we have to propose what we believe we'd like to build in order to fully explore whether or not it can be built. We know that we will need to redesign and rebuild the existing methane management system upon our construction. That work's already started in portions of the landfill. It will continue. It will continue to be collaborative with the county and with Wisconsin DNR. And there will be absolute strict adherence to all WDNR standards. So what we can promise is that we will follow the process. We will work with the county. We will work with the DNR. We will work with all of the applicable regulatory agencies. And we will ensure that we're taking the appropriate steps to protect the public and health and human safety. The northeast of Rawson folks are largely our Greendale neighbors, and the strongest concerns we heard from them were light and noise. And there are a variety of issues that go along with this. One, on a formal basis, the light issues were resolved with the city of Greendale in 2014. That was a formal negotiated settlement. The current conditions meet the city of Franklin ordinances. But going forward, what we will do is hire a consultant to study the light and sound issues associated with the new improvements in order to make sure that we receive the best recommendations possible to utilize best practices available, to assure that we remain in compliance with city ordinances, and to achieve the best and most reasonable solution available to us. So again, it's a process promise. There's not something specific that we can promise, but there is. We absolutely represent that we will follow a process and find a consultant that can give us all the right answer for those things. Market research. Lots of folks have asked us about the viability of individual components of the plan. So at the city's request, we hired a firm called Meggenberg Research to prepare a market study for the development. It was included as an appendix to the submittal. They researched the development in the market in January and February of this year to get us as close to today as possible. And the purpose was to help us plan the development and help the city review our plan. So this is a selected summary of the conclusions. There are more conclusions than this. If you see something in bold italics, it's me emphasizing it, not them. And I won't read all of these, but generally, a potential baseball stadium development would spur ancillary commercial uses. Additionally, the inclusion of a multifamily component to the stadium would help to enhance the population of permanent and transient consumers to the area. People of Franklin appear to want more traditional retail and dining uses. We heard that every listening session we ever had. Ancillary commercial uses should focus on local users. That's what I do. That's one of the things that's been the hallmark of my development activity. And the proposed development would benefit from additional ancillary commercial uses, retail, restaurant, etc. The intent is to create an all-encompassing community with a local identity. We know that current conditions support retail uses, and office and lodging uses as they sit today are not currently financially feasible, and we know this. But even though they're not currently feasible, if RevPAR, which is a hotel metric, were able to get to a certain level, then the hotel use would be able to be accommodated, and it could very well be financially feasible within 2 years. And a lot of this has to do with a cart and a horse problem in that we don't need the hotel today. But if we create another 150 to 200,000 trips a year to this location with a baseball stadium that UWM plays in and that hosts numerous events outside of UWM and a minor league baseball team, the hotel demand may very well exceed what the Hampton Inn and the other infrastructure in the community can support. So we recognize that the market will drive that. The market research suggests we may get to that point. And we also know that all of these potential development uses are tied fundamentally to this additional activity that would be generated through the stadium itself. It is the driver, the fundamental driver of the types of activity and engagement that would support the balance of the development. We also know that there are linkages here to employment, shopping, entertainment, highways, and market rate multifamily just absolutely makes sense. We know that it's a positive location for all age groups, so how we build the community will define which types of folks are coming to us and the age groups and all of those things, but we know it would be attractive to the broad range of folks for market rate housing. The market has a need for higher-end luxury multifamily development. In fact, we anticipate that there's very substantial and meaningful pent-up demand for that type of product in Franklin. And we also, based upon what the market research folks have suggested, believe that the market rents would be between $1.40 and $1.60 a square foot. To put that in some context, that is consistent with the rents that you would find in Brookfield. That's roughly 20 to 25 cents a square foot higher than the rents that we're projecting for Drexel Town Square. And it is a rental range that is squarely within the range of luxury multifamily for what we're seeing in the broader market. So why apartments now? And I've talked about some of this before, and I'm going to go through this very, very quickly before I go into the plan. You know, I recognize the challenges associated with supporting apartments, and I understand as a neighbor what the concerns may be. But the reality of today is, in 2005, what we're proposing would have been condominiums. It's just simply not 2005 anymore. And this type of housing is fundamental to how communities are able to retain their long-term tenants, residents, let them stay in the community, but free up their homes for the next generation of residents. And we have done extremely well in our communities with empty nesters. We've also found folks for families in transition that are building a home. The Dragers are fortunate. It sounds like they have a house to live in while they build one next door, but there are folks who are building a home and or significantly remodeling a home, and they need to stay in the community, and they need a high-quality place to live. Apartments solve for many of the underlying pressures that impact how communities are able to thrive going forward. In order for communities to compete effectively, not only do they need to have the types of housing options that support the residents, but they need the types of commercial options that make the place a more dynamic community in which to live. And that's really what Ballpark Commons is doing. The suburban market is well-defined. I've given many public presentations on the suburban market and what's happening. I'm not going to do that again right now, but I can tell you that Franklin is a classic example of a community that has average age of homeownership increasing every year because folks love living here and they stay here for a very long time. And at some point, there's a tipping point where those houses need to turn into the next community. So now what I'd like to do is talk about the master plan specifically, and I know that's why a lot of folks are here. So the master plan is, again, I'm going to speak in two different categories. We're going to talk about north of Rawson, and we're going to talk about south of Rawson. So the perspective on this is a little bit funny. There have been some substantial changes to what we from what we presented in the past. This is the new plan. The red road running through is proposed to be a public road. It would connect at 76th and Loomis over there, and it would wind down through past where the lodge is today around the stadium and connect to a new intersection down at Rawson. You can see similar elements to what we had before. These are the two plans side by side. So the one on the left is the new plan. The one on the right is the old plan. The most marked changes are, one, if you look at the scale of the footprint in the building at the top of plan, that's the Four Seasons facility. That facility is, one, larger and of a much heavier bricks and mortar scale than we believe we could build on the landfill. today we've presented something much smaller than what it was before, and even though it looks like we're building a bricks and mortar structure on a portion of the site that's landfill, we are highlighting what the shape of this building may be, not necessarily suggesting what the construction type of that building will be. We're projecting an overall scale of use, not a form of architecture with that presentation. The stadium itself, if you look on the right side, you see substantial portions of darker materials suggestive of bricks and mortar. The stadium as proposed today contemplates an earthen berm stadium. The playing field would be at the same grade as the parking around it, as an example. The exterior walls of that stadium where the stands would be located would be built up from that grade using an earthen berm. We've had preliminary conversations with folks underwriting the feasibility of this. We believe there are engineering solutions that can solve for this. And then a more substantial change is located on the bottom, immediately to the north. Northwest of Loomis Road, where we've created a sports village. We now have that public road going down as a main street through what would be a kind of a double-loaded commercial street. Admittedly, this plan shows more retail than we believe is most likely. But again, the role of the general plan is to identify what we think the scale and scope of the development could be. We don't want to come back and ask for additional density. The market will determine ultimately what's feasible here. But we anticipate that as the market receives the stadium and those trips are generated, we will be able to build that commercial space in subsequent phases. One thing I can also tell you, if you went through and looked in the submittal itself, I included a table. It's basically a picture of this with yellow overlaid on all of the parking. We know that the parking for each of these uses must be on plan and must be supported according to all of the required ratios in the Franklin ordinances. Shared parking will be an interesting calculus to go through when we get to specific plans, but this as drawn right now provides parking sufficient to solve for the uses as we've proposed. So, baseball stadium, fundamental to the success of the overall development. We're projecting approximately 2,500 hard seats, a total occupancy of approximately 4,000. Our targets are family-friendly pricing and a very high level of programming. You should be able to watch the game from not just sitting in a seat. You should be able to watch it while you're eating food or having a drink. You should be able to watch the game while your kids are doing some type of programmed activity. We're actually looking at a number of very dynamic environments in which you can watch games. And one thing that's changed since we first presented is Mike Zimmerman 2 years ago wasn't a proven operator. Since that time, one, we've seen what's happened at The Rock. Two, he owns a minor league baseball team in Kokomo, set all of the league records for attendance last year in their first year, averaging over 3,000 folks per game. He owns the Milwaukee Wave, took them from a roughly $725,000 operating loss to a break-even or $725,000 profit, about a $700,000 swing since he took over the team. He's demonstrated an ability to execute the operations of these types of sports teams. And with the commitment from UWM, which we're working right now to meet, we know that not only would Mike Zimmerman's efforts with his minor league team, but also UWM's efforts with their team contribute to the vitality and success of the stadium itself. The multi-purpose sports and entertainment venue, one, the design will be responsive to the limitations imposed by the landfill. We know there is land there that is not within the landfill. So we know the opportunity is there for bricks and mortar improvements along Rawson. The question becomes the nature of the improvements extending to the north. What we are doing now is working on a four-season approach to how to program activities at the Ballpark Commons. We are actually working right now on two very dynamic and independent concepts. One is an indoor kind of family entertainment type center. We've seen some very, very strong examples in a variety of markets, and one that we are looking at very closely. And we're looking at an extremely dynamic golf destination. But one of those is bricks and mortar. The other one is not so much bricks and mortar. So we're already looking at the alternatives for ways to solve for potential limitations imposed on us by the landfill. The Sports Village, I talked about that a little bit. I don't propose that we call it Main Street, but we do propose that it be double-lined with commercial uses on both sides of the street. This is where bars and restaurants and retail and those types of uses would be most likely. We really want to create a mixed-use node of activity at Rawson and the new public street. And there, the mixed-use building, which could include housing above, is intended to create a sense of scale to marry to what's done in the Four Seasons building. And then we also have included a freestanding restaurant pad, which could accommodate a larger format restaurant. Just a couple other things quickly on what's happening north of Rawson. One, all the parking would be accounted for. Absolute attention paid throughout the design process to the pedestrian experience. If it's not right for the pedestrian, it will not work. So we have absolute attention paid to how sidewalks and paths would work throughout the entire development. The Oak Leaf Trail connection and expansion through the site in collaboration with the county. Potential public access, multi-purpose fields located at the northwest corner of the site. And what we will have is an absolute dedication to programming. How these spaces are used is going to ultimately drive their success. South of Rawson, I suspect there's a fair number of folks behind me interested in this plan. This is a quick 3D image of what is a two-dimensional plan. Rawson is north is to the right on this drawing. Again, I apologize that the distortion that occurs when you look at things this way. On the northwest corner of the site, which is the red buildings, that's the commercial area of this development. There we anticipate not more than approximately 50,000 square feet of commercial space. We've anticipated that 100-door hotel and 25,000 square feet of commercial space can be self-parked very easily within the footprint that we've provided there. And so we would anticipate a mix of uses potentially to include that hotel. The current plan versus the previous plan suggests a couple of changes. The mixed-use portion has stayed relatively consistent to where it was, but a couple other things have changed that are more significant. We previously had commercial all the way along Rawson, lining it all the way up to the property line adjacent to Stonehenge. We've removed that commercial in that portion of the site, so the northwest portion of the site no longer includes commercial. We also had our larger three-story buildings pushed up against the Stonehenge border over there, and you can note a substantial number of these buildings spread through the previous plan. What we've done now is we've reoriented the road. The road improvement is also anticipated to be public in this location with the roundabout. So the horseshoe-shaped road going from Rawson to Rawson, and then the portions dropping generally to the southwest away from that roundabout, wrapping back into Loomis, is projected to be public. We have seen the traffic impact analysis that the city commissioned, and we've reviewed it. There are no answers right now as to what the ultimate solution will be for Loomis. We are anticipating that we will become a collaborative partner in how that improvement will happen. What we show today is Old Loomis Road continuing from our road to the south, so that the connection into the southern entry into Stonehenge can remain intact. But we also anticipate that between the Department of Transportation and the City of Franklin, accommodations may be met to allow the road to actually gain direct access to Loomis, potentially opening, as we understand it, the potential for future development on the other side of Loomis Road. We believe that's an important component of Franklin's future economic growth. We aren't proposing anything there. We're just trying to be accommodating of what we anticipate and understand the future of that area of Franklin to be. You can note that we have stormwater management accommodated in a number of locations, and those remain consistent roughly with where they were before. But the other significant change is that we've introduced the two-story townhome product along the west property line. If you look at the location of those buildings and if you look at how they orient to the lots to the west, they actually match up pretty effectively to both the size of the homes to the west and to the general lot-like configuration of the homes to the west. So we've tried to be sensitive to what the relative relationship is between them. You'll note in the center of plan, just to the left of the roundabout there, a clubhouse. That clubhouse is on a program central green. We've worked to further enclose that within the overall development, so again, it doesn't impose itself on the Stonehenge neighbors to the west. It's up to 303 total apartments, 100-foot building setback line at the west property line, 60-foot landscape berm. I have a section of that to show you. There's up to 7 3-story apartment buildings, and if we go back and look, that's as opposed to 4, 11, 13, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21 residential buildings in the previous plan. So we've substantially stepped down the number of buildings by going to the mix that we've gone. This is, again, intended to be a very engaged community, building on this notion of activity. We're talking about a potential skating pond with a warming house. We're looking at a potential dog run along Loomis and a comprehensive system of paths and pedestrian connection running through the entire development. This is just intended to give you a little bit of perspective. The bottom section of this shows an existing residential scaled to its size as presented in the community with a 40-foot driveway and side yard. We're then suggesting a 60-foot landscape buffer with a berm at a 3-to-1. At a 3-to-1 berm, we'd actually be able to get to a pretty, at 30 feet, we can get to an 8-to-10-foot berm, which we would then landscape. And then a 40-foot alley or garage access area before the townhomes would start. So we're showing 100 feet from the property line to the townhomes. And note that there are homes approximately 40 feet from the property line on the other side of that property line. So we believe we're being sensitive to the sense of scale and the size of the development as proposed. These images were included in slightly different formatting in the submittal. These are just representative images of the types of architecture that we would anticipate kind of using as a starting point, as a reference point. Somewhat traditional in form, pitched roof,